Live from New York City, it's The Gary Knoll Show. And now, your host, Gary Knoll.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Knoll. Today, we're going to learn about how acupuncture can help people with depression if after they've had a stroke. This is from the Second Military Medical School in China. We have a lot more on that and how we can live a longer and healthier life. Then we're going to have a guest on today's program. Our guest is going to be a whistleblower. Google's covert operations to undermine democracy and freedom of speech. Well, between Zuckerberg supporting Trump and then Google censoring everything from progressives and true liberals and even true conservatives, because they want a very corporate, Democratic-friendly Hillary Clinton ticket. And she will probably, at this moment, I'm willing to say that she will be the person who will be nominated. Seems impossible, improbable. We'll see. In any case, we're going to have Zach on, Zach Ruiz, and he is a former Google engineer who worked with the Silicon Valley giant for over 8 years, much of that time in Google's YouTube division, before discovering Google's artificial intelligence program known as Machine Learning Fairness. After investigating this program through internal Google documents in his possession, Zach turned whistleblower and delivered 950 pages of company documents to the Department of Justice and released the same to the public. So they're attacking him. We're going to have him on to talk about how dangerous is Google. Also today, time permitting, we'd like to share some video clips with you, which you can also watch. That's right. You can watch these, and I'm going to, and you can watch it by this. If you want to watch when I go to an audio clip and see the actual video, go to youtube.com/PRNFM. youtube.com/PRNFM. We're going to have a part of a program on today from a doctor in Kenya, Dr. Mumbai, talking about the sterilization agenda in Africa by giving him free human papillomavirus vaccines for Kenyan girls. Also, I thought it was time to reintroduce something that's, almost 40 years old, my Dinner with Andre, and that little three-minute segment where they're talking about conspiracy theories. Boy, is that prophetic. Also, why we're heading for what is called a climate catastrophe, a BBC Nightline report, and then Honest Government, we're going to look at colas, little cola bears and trees. Short little two-minute segment. That's what we're going to try to squeeze in. We won't get it all in, probably, but we begin with the latest in health and healing. And this study is about acupuncture. Now, we know that acupuncture is an age-old tradition of Chinese medicine, and it has withstood the test of time. Even today, acupuncture is still used to assist in healing and recovery, as well as to relieve discomfort and pain. Acupuncture therapy is popular among patients who have undergone intensive and harsh treatments like surgeries and chemotherapy and radiation. And because of its ability to improve patient recovery and its lack of adverse effects, many patients in search of relief are now opting for this natural therapy to be used instead of analgesics. In a recent article published in the Journal of Alternative and Complementary Medicine, researchers from the Second Military Medical University in China reported that acupuncture also has a positive influence on mental health. The results of their randomized controlled trial show that acupuncture can be used to reduce depression in patients recovering from stroke. So that's good. One more thing to add that can make a difference. From the University of Guelph in Canada comes a study about avocados. Now, avocados are really a superfood. They're extremely beneficial. The fats in them are good fats for your heart, and they're also good for your brain, and they also help you lose weight. And they're great for diabetes, according to this study. So the takeaway message is simple. This was published in the journal Molecular Nutrition Food Research, and it said that avocados, quote, can inhibit cellular processes that normally lead to diabetes. Well, that's good. We have an epidemic of diabetes. And in safety testing in humans, the team also found that the substance was absorbed into the blood with no adverse effects to your kidney, liver, and muscles. That's even better. Compare that to the sugar, white granulated sugar, that's in most sodas and pastries, or the high fructose corn syrup that can lead to non-alcoholic fatty liver disease suffered by tens of millions of Americans. And think of all the caffeine, highly anabolic, and can lead to GERD and ulcers in the stomach. And just the side effects of commonly consumed foods, the trans fats and pizza crusts and French fries and the muffins and bread that sandwiches are put on. So the avocado is good as an energy powerhouse. It helps our cellular metabolism. It helps the mitochondria, and it burns fatty acids much better. So normally, fatty acid oxidation allows the body to burn fats, and obesity and diabetes hinders that process. That leads to incomplete oxidation, which means you're going to have more free radical buildup. You're going to have more destruction and attacking of your actual DNA. So people on this, or it wasn't actually people, it was mice on a high-fat diet for 8 weeks to induce obesity and insulin resistance. For the next 5 weeks, they were given avocados in place. That was their high fat. And the treated mice were significantly less in weight than those that controlled, that ate the fat. So an avocado helped slow weight gain and was very good for blood sugar imbalances. So have an avocado a day. Just made an avocado last night. Simple thing, hollowed out an avocado. And by the way, when you're making avocados, always first take a veggie wash, or if you want to make your own, you can do it with hydrogen peroxide and some water, and you put the avocado in, you agitate it, rinse it, 3 times agitation, and rinse, and that cleans off all the surface bacteria that you wouldn't see necessarily, or even parasites. Then you skin the avocado, make sure your knife is clean, and even after I skin the avocado, I still pour water over it just in case I miss something. And that way you've got a really clean avocado. That would be true for any vegetable. Then you cut it in half. In this case, I simply diced up some raw red onion, some quinoa, and I put a lemon orange sauce. Simple to make a lemon orange sauce. You simply put some whole orange into a blender and or a food processor, and you blend it down. Now from that, a certain amount is going to be liquid. That becomes what you pour into a little spritzer bottle, and that's your infusion. And then you can add anything else to it. So if you want to put lemon and orange together, it makes a very exotic flavor. And then you spray that onto the quinoa. And then you put some extra virgin olive oil on it and a little black pepper. And then you've got this delicious little, what I call grazing food. It's just a half an avocado, and with quinoa, and with olive oil, all good. By the way, I'm going to start my next cookbook as soon as this health study is over, and I'm going to make it 300 gourmet, vegan, gluten-free, sugar-free desserts. And I'm going to do 100 chocolate desserts, and I should have it done within the next couple months. And I'm going to do something different this time. I'm going to do it as a book. My publisher wants it a book, but I'm going to do it over the internet also. One gourmet recipe per week. That way, those who don't want to get a book or can't afford it will be able to get it for free on the internet. From the University of Sydney, Boswellia, Boswellia, Serrata, Serrata. That's one herb. But then you have pine bark. There's your pycnogenol. And then you have curcumin. So we're dealing with three different substances, boswellia, pine bark, or pycnogenol, and curcumin. It relieves osteoarthritis, who says, University of Sydney says. So that's an important study because it's showing, once again, supplements have strong therapeutic value in the body. And they turn off inflammation and help the body heal. So for those of you who have arthritis, any form, those three substances can certainly help. Also from INHA, that's INHA, University College of Medicine, that's in South Korea, published in the Journal of Medicinal Food, there's a natural compound in Japanese honeysuckle, honey, H-O-N-E-Y, suckle, S-U-C-K-L-E, one word. It can help you if you have gastrointestinal problems. And let's face it, millions of people in Canada, and we're heard all over the world, so the United States, but worldwide, they have gastric and peptic ulcers. And these are gastrointestinal problems. They cause pain, discomfort, constipation, bloating, diarrhea. Well, a compound in the Japanese honeysuckle helps with these conditions. Write down the actual name of the original substance from which it's derived. L-O-N-I-C-E-R-A, lonicera. That's the first word, L-O-N-I-C-E-R-A. And the second word is japonica, J-O-J-A-P-O-N-I-C-A, japonica. So that way you've got both terms. So if you go into a store and you say, I'd like some honeysuckle extract, and they say, well, we don't have any. But if you say, I want the extract of Lasuria japonica, oh, we have that, because it can make a big difference. It really turns off the inflammation and brings down the cytokines that are causing all this oxidative stress and they've been able to impact gastric lesions and diverticulitis, colitis, spastic colon. So these are almost all acetic acid-induced problems in the body. High acid diet, meat, sugar, alcohol, refined carbohydrates. At the beginning of our study, which we're more than half through now, we have taken at the very beginning 2 days, and I mean 8-hour days of testing, blood testing, medical exams, everything to the body, even though it's not a medical clinical study. It's health and behavior and nutritional study. But we wanted to see if we could actually change actual biological markers of aging and impact the DNA. And lo and behold, we found every single person was dehydrated. They didn't know it. And a lot of people just don't realize that they need more water in the body. And when you're reducing the water content of the body, you also can end up with brain fog, confusion, memory loss, lapse, and fatigue and insomnia. So make sure that you're drinking a lot of water, not in excess of your needs, but what you need. So this is from the University of Illinois. Drinking more water improves multitasking ability in children. And this was published in the Journal of Nutrition. So it's simple. Children are playing all the time, or should be, hopefully. So drinking water not only keeps children hydrated, but also increases their ability to multitask. And so that's important. So make sure that you don't use urination as your guideline for hydration. I'll give you an example. Let's say that you do a marathon, 26 plus miles, and you drink some water throughout the race. You're going to lose upwards of about 9 pounds of water during that race. You won't lose actual weight, muscle and fat. That's minor. But water, yeah. So let's say you go home and you drank throughout the day a gallon of water. You're not going to be hydrated, because the water has safety mechanisms that when you've reached a certain amount, it shuts off hydration and you just urinate it all out. So what you should do is take amounts of water each day, like an extra cup each day. And then the next week, an extra cup. Well, in a couple of weeks, you've rehydrated. And when you're outside in the summertime, or you're being athletic, or you're sweating a lot, hydrate. When you go into a sauna, take water with you. Take a quart of water with you and hydrate. So this way you don't dehydrate. Pomegranate can help protect your skin. Pomegranate juice. The University of California at Los Angeles published in the peer-reviewed journal Scientific Reports. This was a randomized trial and revealed an association between drinking pomegranate juice or consuming pomegranate extract and protecting against ultraviolet B radiation. That's UVBs, the type of ultraviolet radiation responsible for sunburn and related skin cancers. They didn't take a lot. 1,000 milligrams is 1 gram, or that would be equivalent to about 8 ounces, a small cup of pomegranate juice. And then they compared that with a placebo group juice for 12 weeks. And before and after the treatment period, melanin index and hydration and skin surface, sebum levels and skin microbiota were all evaluated. And they found that those who had their pomegranate had a much better outcome for their skin. That's good. Also, from the University of Buffalo, to encourage healthy eating, focus on farmers markets. Why? Smaller purveyors of produce, like a mobile unit or farmers markets, are really the cream of the crop when it comes to increasing fruit and vegetable consumption in low-income communities. And opening new supermarkets, however, has not been shown to have much of an impact in that regard. And that's the takeaway of the literature review of science that says that if you had one of these mobile units going through your neighborhood, there's a good idea for you. And then you're taking the farmer's market to the people. I can remember in the summertime getting up early, helping milk the cows, and then they would load these containers into the back of a pickup truck, and we'd drive them in to where they were all dumped into to the place that did all the processing for the milk. And then I can remember that there would be a truck, a flatbed truck, that was really neatly fitted out. And they had eggs, and they had like an egg basket, and they had all kinds of baskets filled with produce. And they also had a container up there of cream and milk. And actually, when you bought your milk when I was growing up, you got your cream on top of it. And that was always fun to, you know, not shake it and take that, pour that over. So made it delicious. So wouldn't it be a great idea if you did that? That's a good idea for you. Do a flatbed truck, design it like something out of the 1920s, and have baskets of food, produce, and underneath you can have a refrigeration unit, so it's keeping it all fresh. And then, you know, go up and down the streets. You're going to have to get a, you know, permit to do it. That's fine. And let people know on whatever day you're going to come. And just like the old ice cream guy that would ring the bell and all the kids would run out, you can ring the bell and people would know to come out and get fresh, organic, locally produced food. You know, I like to share ideas. I like to empower people. There's a positive solution to going into supermarkets, and we really need those in lower-income neighborhoods where they don't have the availability frequently of a large selection of inexpensive and healthy, fresh, and locally grown produce. And one last one today, and that is that bans trans fats, what I mentioned earlier in the show, that are used in French fries, potato chips, pretzels, they increase your risk of dementia. This is from Kyushu University in Japan. So if your diet is one where you're having all those different chips of all different types, and if they made those, if they bake them at low heat, fine. You can even put them in and have raw chips. Yeah, you can do that by having, a dehydrator at about 115 degrees, and therefore the enzymes, the vitamins, minerals, phytonutrients are all intact. It's just been, moisture's been wicked off, so you're getting it a little more crisp. But if you're taking the regular commercial French fries or chips or bagels, then you're going to have a lot of trans fats, and that increases your risk of dementia. And by the way, it used to be the average age of dementia was about 70. Not now. Younger people are developing dementia. It's it's really on the rise. So that's the latest on health and healing, and we're going to take a break. And when we come back from the break, we're going to, I want to go to this report, Honest Government. This is a new little series we're doing. They're just a minute and a half clips, but it's about when you see an ad for Australia, you see the koala bears, and they're cute as can be, and they're always in a tree chewing leaves. Well, we've also seen in the past the orangutans, and their forests are being completely destroyed because of palm oil. So instead of asking people, don't eat anything with palm oil, listing the products, and therefore forcing a lack of demand, which would then reduce the need for supply, we continue to put it right down to the floor, pedal to the metal. So we'll be back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Koalas? How cute are they?
No, look at this one.
What about trees? Here's a koala in a tree.
You like that, hey?
Well, few then, because Australia's koala population is declining so rapidly, your grandkids will only ever see one of these fairy birds in a show bag.
But relax. It's just a natural consequence of the regional forest agreements we introduced back in the 90s. Just like your inability to afford your own home today is a natural consequence of this from back then. That and those smashed Avo brekkies you scoff all day. It's all part of our fit policy, making sure there'll be less good left for our kids to enjoy. We introduced soon after we invaded Australia, by obliterating half of our ancient native forests. And now, thanks to those RFAs and the highest rate of land clearing in the developed world, we're doing our best to destroy what's left, which is why so many koalas have nowhere left to live, just like all you first home buyers out there. Oh, and if Barney gets his way, this little fella will soon be homeless and bugger off too. But look on the bright side. Logging jobs they've also declined due to mechanisation and, well, the fact there's fewer native trees left to log. So as you can see, it's been a lose-lose strategy, and that's why we're planning to renew those RFAs for another two decades. So we can turn what's left of this into paper, coffee cups and ickets, instead of using plantations, alternative fibres, and protecting the remaining wilderness in proposed sanctuaries like the Great Koala National Park and the Great Forest National Park, which would create stacks of ongoing tourism jobs, stunning recreational areas, a secure home for furry buggers, and help avoid epic climate change fail, since our eucalypt forests store more carbon than any other forest in the world. Koalas in trees. Cute, but authorised by the Australian Department for Intergenerational Theft.
They really take on the issues, and I appreciate what they do. Now, an original report, continuing with our series of challenges to Wikipedia. And why are we doing this? It takes an enormous amount of our time. We're not paid for that. We donate it for the common public good, because the number one source in the world for finding about health and alternative approaches to illness, if orthodoxy has not been able to help us, is Wikipedia. So think of the hundreds of millions of people using it each week, and what if they had tried an orthodox therapy and it had failed, and their only hope for improvement was if there was something out there within the alternative field. They go to Wikipedia, and without exception, every single area of health is denigrated. And so you think, well, I'm nothing to do. I have no more options left. Think of the people who have died. Think of the people who have suffered in pain because they didn't believe that a therapy that had been denigrated on Wikipedia was worth trying. That's why we're doing this. Not for us, but to show that this is an organized, systematic campaign. Now, is Big Pharma behind it? Are ideologues behind it? Are censorship groups behind it. They have a big hate campaign against anyone who questions vaccines or genetically engineering or 5G. So you make up your mind on that. We're just going to share the facts. This article, which is posted today, is called Wikipedia's Hate Campaign Against Ayurveda. Alongside traditional Chinese medicine, Indian Ayurveda, and that's spelled A-Y-U-R-V-E-D-A, is one of the world's oldest medical systems still widely accepted and practiced today. It has managed to thrive and flourish for at least 3,000 years and has built up an enormous body of diagnostic methods and treatments for a wide variety of mild to life-threatening illnesses and diseases. Now, evidence-based medicine has yet to fully explore its riches. Unlike modern conventional medicine that dominates our healthcare, Ayurveda is different. It is a whole medical system that goes way beyond standard disease management, but it also incorporates sophisticated ways to sustain life, prevent physical disorders, as well as to balance the body and mind to promote wellness. We might look at an entry for Ayurveda in a real encyclopedia, the Encyclopedia Britannica. The Britannica notes that approximately 500 million Indians rely upon Ayurveda for their health care. In 1971, the Indian government established the standards for Ayurveda education while recognizing the invaluable contributions this ancient medical system has made to prevent and treat a wide variety of diseases. According to statistics recorded by the Association for Ayurvedic Physicians in India, the nation's largest Ayurvedic organization, by the way, India now has 250 Ayurvedic colleges and higher education institutions and graduates of approximately 12,000 Indian doctors annually. Now, that means that right now, the association, by the way, which is affiliated with a medical school at Hindu Benares University in Varanasi, often regarded as India's equivalent to Oxford University in Great Britain. So it's the highest academic standards, the highest respect of an institution in India. It's estimated across the country right now there are 450,000, nearly a half a million registered Ayurvedic practitioners. That's a lot of people practicing. These are doctors. So today, functional medicine is becoming more recognized as a course of disease management. Functional medicine is a biologically based approach to identify and tackle the root cause of an illness rather than focusing exclusively upon symptoms. Any given disease may have many causative factors. It might be your genes, the environment, toxins, trauma, lifestyle. It could be viruses and bacteria, nutritional deficiencies. Well, functional medicine, which is historically the natural medicine that Hippocrates used and Maimonides used and Pliny the Elder used, this goes to the cause of a problem, which may be different for each person, even if they manifest the same identical symptoms and hence get the same diagnosis. You could have 1,000 people are all diagnosed with, let's say, heart disease, but each one could have a different set of causes, and therefore you have to work with them differently. Yet the underlying theory behind functional medicine has always been the basis for Ayurveda. Here's what the Britannica has to say. Quote, like scientific medicine, Ayurveda has both preventative and curative aspects. The preventative component emphasizes the need for a strict code of personal and social hygiene, the details of which are depending upon individual, climactic, and environmental needs. Bodily exercises, the use of herbal preparations, and yoga form a part of the remedial measures. The curative aspects of Ayurveda include the use of herbal medicines, external preparations, physiotherapy, and diet. It is a principle of Ayurveda that the preventative and therapeutic measures be adapted to the personal requirements of each patient. End quote. That seems reasonable. So in other words, the Encyclopedia Britannica is describing Ayurvedic medicine as, quote, a well-organized system of traditional health care. Doesn't get better than that. That's honest. That's objective. What do we discover, however, under Wikipedia's pseudo-encyclopedic entry for Ayurveda? The first thing that might pop up for a viewer is a pictorial box of the heading, quote, this article is part of a series on alternative and pseudo-medicine. Which means that if you're a person like myself who believes that eating a healthy organic diet, exercising, stress management, and looking at over 500,000 articles on PubMed about vitamin C, vitamin E, and how much of that do I need to optimize my body's health, well, you wouldn't pay any attention to Wikipedia because you wouldn't get objective information. I would get that by going to another source. But beneath an image of the Hindu god, the patron deity of Vedic medicine, Ayurveda is further identified as, quote, fringe medicine and science, and, quote, conspiracy theories, end quote. Now, the accompanying link to the series brings up another page that identifies, quote, alternative medicine, and what do they identify it with? Quote, health fraud. This is how the skeptic ideology that has taken over Wikipedia frames all of its pages on alternative medical practices. It's a common skeptic strategy to disparage and dissuade Wikipedia users from taking these non-conventional therapies seriously. Quote, although laboratory experiments suggest it is possible that some substances used in Ayurveda might be developed into effective treatments, there's no scientific evidence that any are effective as currently practiced. Ayurveda medicine is considered pseudoscientific. Other researchers considered it proto-science or trans-science systems. Instead, today Ayurvedic medicine is considered pseudoscientific on account of its confusion between reality and metaphysical concepts, end quote. Wow. Well, if I was the average person, I was reading this and I wanted to see if there's an alternative practice for cancer, heart disease, lowering my blood pressure, helping overcome allergies, gastrointestinal illnesses, I'd say, well, no, I'm not going to use some quackery. I'm not going to use something that's based on metaphysical concepts. But listen carefully. The last sentence is referenced by a near nonsensical skeptic screed found in the Oxford Handbook of Psychiatry and makes no mention whatsoever to what the skeptic Wikipedia editor is trying to convey. We read it. We know. This is another typical incidence of skeptics misquoting and reinterpreting the sources they reference to get their personal opinions wrongly validated. On a separate Wikipedia page, quote, clinical trials of Ayurvedic drugs, end quote, the entry claims that, quote, no firm evidence, end quote, that Ayurveda can treat rheumatoid arthritis, an autoimmune condition that has been treated by Ayurvedic methods for hundreds of years. However, an honest objective study published in the International Journal of Ayurvedic Research, sponsored by the World Health Organization, and involving the collaboration of both allopathic, mainstream medicine, and Ayurvedic physicians, followed 290 patients with rheumatoid arthritis using Ayurvedic protocols for 7 years, relying upon the criteria established by the American Rheumatology Association. The study results showed, quote, statistically significant improvement in all parameters from admission to discharge. Even patients with severe functional limitations showed significant improvements, end quote. The World Health Organization-sponsored study has been criticized for the lack of controls. Really? Let us remind the skeptics and Jimmy Wales and the people at Wikipedia that none of the vaccines on the market that you support and promote on Wikipedia, aside from the human papilloma vaccine, Gardasil vaccine, has been double-blind tested against a scientifically valid placebo. And in the case of Gardasil, 17 girls died during the clinical trials. More than 27,000 have been hospitalized and severely injured. Nevertheless, without demanding a thorough investigation into the cause of these mortalities and sicknesses, the FDA fast-tracked the vaccine through the review process. So laden are the egregious hypocrisies in modern skeptic literature and on Wikipedia, we can only conclude that duplicity and insincerity are the institutionalized basis of skeptic ideology and Wikipedia. Both Ayurveda and traditional Chinese medicine have been shown to be effective in treating Alzheimer's disease, so says the peer-reviewed literature. Amyloid beta peptides have been one of the characteristic biomarkers that is believed to lead to irreversible neurological damage. Therefore, developing drugs to inhibit beta amyloid has been a primary therapeutic target. Unfortunately, the current popular drugs marketed to manage Alzheimer's have very serious toxic effects and very limited efficacy. On the other hand, both the Indian and Chinese plant pharmacopoeias have identified medicinal herbs with superior biosafety that possess multi-targeting activity to specific beta-amyloid enzyme inhibition. One plant in particular is called Brahmi, B-R-A-H-M-I. It's commonly used in Ayurvedic formulas. In a 2019 analysis of the existing research published in the Archives of Biochemistry and Biophysics, a major, highly respected peer-reviewed journal, the overall evidence concluded, quote, Brahmi can be used as a lead formulation for treatment of Alzheimer's disease and other neurological disorders, end quote. Leading skeptics such as Quack Watch founder Stephen Barrett, Harriet Hull, Stephen Novella, and David Gorski have written diatribes against Ayurveda, as well as other ancient indigenous medicinal systems. Quoted in Wikipedia, Harriet Hull, for example, claims, quote, Ayurveda is basically superstition mixed with supkhan, a practical health advice, and it can be dangerous, end quote. Really? Where's your evidence? This statement can only be accepted if we reject 5,500 peer-reviewed studies into Ayurveda cataloged in the National Institutes of Health's PubMed database and 5,000-plus positive studies recorded in the Chopra Library. Wikipedia also pulls a quote from Cancer Research UK, quote, now listen carefully, this is important. You'll really learn something from this. Quote, there is no scientific evidence to prove that Ayurvedic medicine can treat or cure cancer or any other disease, end quote. All right, that's it. That's a nail in the coffin. Not so quick. The same entry by the same group, the Cancer Research UK, also states, quote, listen carefully, researchers have found that some Ayurvedic treatments can help relieve cancer symptoms. It can also improve quality of life. And they have found some medicinal herbs might help to slow the growth of cancer in animals, end quote. That's strange. Skeptic editors controlling Wikipedia's Ayurvedic page intentionally chose to exclude the Institute's positive statements. This is blatant cherry-picking and extremely disingenuous. Besides, there is a growing body of research showing the therapeutic promises many of these ancient herbs have for preventing and treating cancer. In fact, this is actually referenced by the Cancer Research UK. So why would they choose to exclude that which actually showed it impacted cancer? Researchers in 2011 found that the common Ayurvedic herb, withania, also known as ashwagandha or Indian ginseng, quote, stopped the growth of some types of breast cancer cells, end quote, in test tubes and mice. In 2017, another study found the same root, ashwagandha extract, improved the efficacy of cisplatin chemotherapy. And in a 2018 study observed ashwagandha contributed to the apoptosis of melanoma cancer cells, meaning programmed cell death. So if you took ashwagandha as part of Ayurvedic therapy, you were more likely to survive melanoma. A more recent 2019 analysis of preclinical in vivo studies conducted by the University of Ghent in Belgium identified, quote, biochemical framework, end quote, that contributes to ashwagandha's polypharmaceutical effect against carcinogenic biomarkers. Another major botanical frequently used in Ayurvedic formula to treat inflammatory conditions, Boswellia serrata, or Indian frankincense, has been observed to slow the growth of bowel cancer and triple negative breast cancer cells. Skeptics' simple-mindedness often conflates essential ideas and concepts that underlie traditional medical systems with what Stephen Barrett terms as metaphysical mumbo-jumbo. Gee, Steve, that's really intelligent comment. Metaphysical mumbo-jumbo. It is a frequent habit among skeptics, notably the authors of Quackwatch, to categorically dismiss and even ridicule whatever they cannot understand. But more likely, skeptics are so entrenched in their own world of religious beliefs that, and I'm not talking about religious because they're all atheists, but they've made their belief system into a religion to them, and an ultra-orthodox one. So anything outside of skepticism's limited rationalist and pharmaceutically based paradigm remains incomprehensible and therefore repudiated as pseudoscience, to be attacked and abolished. Yet, were the ancient physicians onto something that modern science has yet to explore and understand? One example is Ayurveda in its theory of a particular way of practicing the whole field of prevention and treatment, which are fundamental constitutional categories, or what we call phenotypes, of individuals who are predisposed or vulnerable to certain diseases. Skepticism dismisses any scientific evidence to support this theory outright. However, research conducted at India's Institute for Genomics and Integrative Biology analyzed gene-wide expression levels of groups of patients falling under three of the major classifications, Veta, Pitta, and Kapha. And the results indicate that there are, in fact, fundamental differential gene expressions between the phenotypes that correspond to traditional Ayurvedic definitions and diagnosis. So this is the first attempt to validate traditional phenotyping theories with modern biology and confirm that ancient physicians may have been far ahead of the curve for predicting various disease onsets than even modern medicine at its best. The World Health Organization's Traditional Medical Strategy 2014-2023 is a resolution to further establish the legitimacy of indigenous botanical medical systems such as Ayurveda and traditional Chinese medicine into global health policies and to advance their integrative principle into modern medicine. Skeptics abhor this strategy and are quick to criticize efforts to fund research and investigate the scientific wisdom in these ancient systems to improve health of the world's population. Skepticism embraces a one-size-fits-all model of treating disease. If you are a 8-pound baby or a 400-pound person, you're going to get the same amount of a vaccine in your body. That's how unscientific the so-called scientific medicine is that the skeptics support. Ayurveda and other traditional medical systems, on the other hand, do not exclude disease prevention from sustaining a healthy society. Skeptics do. In conclusion, what did we learn? Well, from Wikipedia, there is no benefit whatsoever for Ayurveda and no science to support it. Okay, that means we can reasonably surmise, based upon Wikipedia, that Ayurveda has no basis in science and should be ignored. We would also assume that those practicing this medical system are quacks, or as Jimmy Wells says, quote, lunatics, charlatans, end quote. But the reality is that 500 million Indians use Ayurveda as their primary health care or alongside modern medicine. And there are more than 450,000 Ayurvedic registered practitioners. Most are medical doctors. And this is for India alone. Ayurveda is also practiced in Nepal, Sri Lanka, Malaysia, Indonesia, and other Southeast Asian countries. This is an established medical system that is approximately 3,000 years old, which has been recognized as a legitimate therapeutic system with over 5,500 known scientific papers to treat cancer, diabetes, arthritis, heart disease, parasitical infections, mental disorders such as PTSD, depression, and more. Therefore, who are the real quacks? Who are utterly clueless about health and wellness? And who is engaged in an intentional disinformation campaign? This is one more reason why Wikipedia and its co-founder Jimmy Wales and its board should be held accountable in the court of public opinion for pretending to be objective and informed authorities when the exact opposite is the case. I'm Gary Noll. We're going to go to our guests right now. And this is posted, or will be within the hour, on PRN.fm. Nice to have you with us today, Zach. I gave your bio at the beginning of our program.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Some of the key issues I would like for you to address, please. Google's machine learning fairness program is important for listeners to understand because it is the basis for how Google monitors and censors searches and prevents sites dealing with subjects such as vaccines and natural health and progressive news, both from nonpartisan left and right, from reaching users. Google is also a pharmaceutical company, having entered large collaborations with GlaxoSmithKline and Merck. And yet we're not told this. So when you go to a natural approach to helping yourself, or is there a safer way to get a vaccine, you're taken to the pro-vaccine pages. You're taken away from looking for anything on organic and natural to something that they have an affiliation with. So if Google is a drug company that now has oversight over the majority of internet traffic, what dangers does this pose? And what is Google's relationship with Wikipedia? We know that Google has donated millions of dollars to Wikipedia. Well, you don't donate that much unless something is expected in return. And how did Google and Wikipedia benefit each other? So please explain Google's DeepMind program. I'm very concerned about that because it's almost like the Manhattan Project, done in secret and for some ultimate means of not helping the world. So what federal agencies are in support of Google? Which ones are in control of aspects of Google? These are all harbingers of something that I feel will be implemented in the U.S. or already are. The forum is yours. Take your time.
Yeah. So the first thing that is important to realize is that Google has an army of people that are going across the internet and manually ranking pages according to what they call an EAT score. And EAT is an acronym standing for expertise, authoritativeness, and trustworthiness. And they publish the guidelines that they use, the protocol that they use for the human raters to score all of these sites. And this is really important because within the search within the document describing this protocol, they list Wikipedia as the prime example of evaluating a website's authoritativeness and expertise. And what they say is that, for example, if a news outlet has won a bunch of awards, then it's considered authoritative. And if a website has a bunch of accolades, then they say that this is an expert in their field. So obviously, if Wikipedia trashes you as an individual or your company, or, you know, basically engages in defamation laundering, then your website expertise goes down. And people have been asking, well, what exactly is going on? And what the best way that I can sum this up is that it's a Chinese-style social credit system that's being installed in America without the American public knowing that this is being installed. And now we're suddenly waking up to the consequences of it. The premier health experts in the world are seeing their traffic absolutely collapse. For example, Mercola, arguably the number one health functional doctor by volume of the amount of articles that have been posted on his website, has seen a 99% drop in the amount of traffic that is generated by Google search. This has been seen with other sites like GreenMed Info, and I know a whole plethora of other people that have lost traffic to their website. But it's not just Google that's doing this. It's also Stripe and PayPal and these payment processors are suddenly cutting off these websites from being able to even collect money for their nutritional supplements and things like CBD. And then what's happening on another front is that their ability to push advertising to get users to be funneled into their websites are also being denied. You cannot use the word CBD in an ad anymore. That will cause it to be banned. And the reason is pretty obvious. These naturopathic remedies they can't be patented, and they threaten the profits of these pharmaceutical monopolies that they're trying to push onto health. In 2016, Google decided that they were going to make a significant change in their direction after the election of Donald Trump. It was almost a night and day difference. Suddenly, the company was really concerned about this concept of fake news, and they felt that it was their goal as a company to protect users from, you know, quote-unquote fake news. I, as a Google employee of 8.5 years, had access to these presentation decks that described what Google's plans were going to be. In fact, all full-time employees had access to these documents. I went in, saw the examples that they were using for fake news, and came to the conclusion that the examples were actual events that had taken place, and that this clampdown on fake news was not about fake news. It was actually about controlling the narrative and maintaining the monopolies of information. And also later, I found out that it was about health. Let me give you an example of some of the most egregious offenses that I've seen. YouTube had this thing called a YouTube query blacklist. In this blacklist are the blacklisted phrases cancer cure and cancer cures. Any video that has this in their title will get deranked. And as I started to look into the internet, what I found was that there was this battle being waged against a natural cure for cancer called vitamin B17 and GC-MAF, MAF standing for macrophage activating factor. This latter chemical has been in development for 25 years, and at this point they have a fifth generation product called Immuno that's being manufactured in Israel. And this entire cure pipeline can actually be, you know, I mean, it invalidates the entire, cancer industry, which is, you know, designed after trying to slow down the disease, but then toxify the patient to the point that they need to get additional health care to manage the toxicity of, chemo and all the other things associated with that. And this is a huge problem. So where does machine learning fairness come into this? Well, you know, Google can only interact so fast. They've got an army of people, but there's a lot of websites, billions, if not trillions, out there on the internet. I think it's more like billions, though. And so, you know, how are they able to go through and systematize all of the collected output of these raters? And the answer to that is that they're going to embed the cumulative output of these raters into a type of AI called machine learning. And the concept of it is machine learning fairness. So what is machine learning? Machine learning is a type of AI that doesn't have, it's not programmed by a person. It's actually programmed by a machine. And the way that it works is that it generates random sort of, it basically has as input tag data. So it's like, here's the input and here's the expected output. And then the machine itself, after going through millions of these input examples, comes to its own conclusion about what patterns will trigger a fake news warning, okay, or a fake news classification, to be more specific. And so what they're doing is that they're unleashing this machine learning fairness on all of this tagged input, and then it's going to generate these machine learning algorithms called classifiers, which then classify novel information according to the past pattern that they've applied so that they can look at anything within milliseconds and be able to determine whether it's, you know, quote-unquote fake news or right-wing propaganda or quackery health science or what have you. And this is essentially the program that I disclosed when I leaked 950 pages to the Department of Justice Antitrust Division and to the media in August of 2019 of this year.
Okay. Could you take us a little further? Why is it that Google is working with Wikipedia? Because Wikipedia is not allowed to create original content, but we got past their firewalls and found all the communications between these so-called experts who call themselves the skeptics, and they have no expertise in any of the fields that they're criticizing. And as I just mentioned on my show today, you have 450,000 doctors and practitioners graduating from the finest educational schools in India, helping 500 million people each year in India, and no reference to any of that, that there are 5,500 peer-reviewed studies. They condemn it with no science backing them up, no legitimate science, and Google supports them, and Google is now saying that Wikipedia should be the final arbiter of what is real and legitimate. That means the kiss of death for everyone in this audience that expects to have anything in the way of natural and natural non-toxic therapies available. And also now I'm seeing that they're trying to mandate that anything involving natural non-toxic be considered unacceptable, unscientific, and banned. So this is serious. Your thoughts, please.
Yeah, so people are asking, like, why is this all happening? Why is there so much collusion between all these different, what we thought were separate corporate entities? And there was the answer to this came in a study called the Network of Global Corporate Control. And what this study did is it took the public information on who sat on what board of all these corporations, and because all that information has to be public, they ran that through a complex program. And it was able to figure out that a tight network of, don't quote me on this, 900 individuals controlled all, like 90% of the world's assets and wealth and all this other stuff. And so, you know, what we have right now is we have the illusion of competition. We have the illusion that corporations are actually different from each other. But in reality, what we have is we've got the extreme version of corporate capture by a group of apex, you could call them capitalists. I don't even call them capitalists at this point. But you could call them apex capitalists. I believe in capitalism, by the way, so I even hate to use the word apex capitalist, but that's essentially what they are. A lot of people refer to them as, you know, the title Illuminati or whatever. But the thing is that it doesn't really matter what you call them. The thing is that there is a group of highly entrenched, highly entrained individuals that own the world's everything. And they are using their different assets in order to collude together, in order to make sure that we are on their monopolies. And if you want to know, like, what the strategy is, I have to point you back to 5,000 years ago with the pharaohs of Egypt. And what they discovered is that if they had the monopoly on water, then their game strategy was to make a desert everywhere else. And this is what we see now. We see artificial scarcity with energy. We see artificial scarcity with good health and food. We see an artificial scarcity in suitable drinking water. And all of these are designed so that so that we are under their mercy. So if we don't go along with their agenda, then their money supply gets pulled or the energy supply gets pulled, like what happened in the 70s when Saudi Arabia, like, had an embargo against the United States. And what this, you know, what this cabal wants to do is be able to blackmail the United States and any other country in the world so that if they don't go along with the agenda, then their economy comes to a screeching halt. And so if you take this sort of methodology and apply it specifically to health, what you see is you see all these, what we thought were despondent, separate entities working together in collusion in order to cherry-pick industry-friendly data to support the foregone conclusion that we should be on this Western medicine, you know, that is patented and only one company has a monopoly on it. And that finally we're compelled to buy it, with, you know, socialized healthcare or what have you. And this is the reason why you're seeing so much, lockstep action happening at the same time. This is the reason why you see Wikipedia being infiltrated and you see, Google, you know, relying on Wikipedia more and more, despite the fact that Wikipedia has been vandalized so much. Let me just give you an example of how much trust Google has in Wikipedia. In, I think it was 2008, there was this, like, media event saying, oh my God, if you go to Google and you type in, California GOP, Google returns back that their ideology is Nazism. Well, as an insider, I was able to go in and research why exactly this was happening. And what I found was that Google was ingesting the ideology tag from Wikipedia, and without any sort of filter, it's just assumed that was true and spit it out on the internet. When this bug was filed to, you know, say we need to correct this, Google's response was like, oh, look, here's some vandalism on Wikipedia, so let's just get rid of the ideology tag being ingested as a true statement, and we'll just ignore it and not return it anymore. This is what's happening with Google and the internet. There's an attempted clampdown that's coming. And I guess the next thing I could talk about is DeepMind, if you'd like to know more about that.
Well, Zach, we're out of time, but how about this? Are you available Tuesday evening for 1 to 2 hour discussion, however long you need to go into the DeepMind in depth and these other conspiracies to minimize or eliminate all of our freedoms of choice, not only in healthcare, but also in politics?
Yes, I would love to, please.
Then you're on. You're going to be on the Progressive Commentary Hour. That's our most listened to program on the Progressive Radio Network. We look forward to having you. We'll be at 7 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. We had Ray McGovern on this past Tuesday for 2 hours. So as much time as you need to lay out your story and your insider whistleblower information, you'll have that. All right, Zach?
Cool. Can I plug myself before I go?
Sure can.
All right. For those of you that want to follow me, go to Twitter and type in Perpetual Maniac. I've got about 27,000 followers. I need as many eyes on me as possible because assassination is a real threat. And the more people that look at me, the harder it is for them to carry out such an operation. Also, I'm fighting dragons. So anyone that can help me, like my tweets, retweet them. We're exposing the deep state, and we're fighting back, and we're going to win.
Thank you, Zach. I look forward to having a long, in-depth conversation with the number one whistleblower, a Google engineer who's telling the truth, and he is right. You go against the deep state, you're going against the most powerful people on earth. So I commend you for your courage, and we'll be there to support you, Zach. Zach Voorhees, V-O-R-H-I-E-S. He'll be for 1 or 2 hours on Tuesday evening. Make it on your calendar now. You won't want to miss it. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.